We are recording episode 89 of the Star Wars Report podcast.
This is a great case for opening up
I think that we should be able to put in listening devices in there.
Sure, illegal search and seizure, done! The freedom lovers at Fox are jettisoning amendments like Han Solo dumping cargo to make the jump to light speed at the first sign of Imperial cruisers, right, Chewie?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast as we edge ever closer to politics and episode 100. Two things that we are edging dangerously close towards. I think that's like the furthest I've ever gone, but I laughed too hard when I saw that clip and I thought, you know what? I could have no cold opening that would be funnier than that. So, welcome to the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm the host and founder of StarWarsReport.com, Riley Blanton. Hope you guys are having a fantastic morning, afternoon, or evening, depending upon which you are listening to this. Please delete as appropriate. Joining me as always is my co-host and sister, Bethany Blaine.
Glad to be here. Glad to be discussing Star Wars.
Yes, welcome back. And good to be on a show where we're really going to discuss Star Wars news. Mm-hmm. Because the last couple, we've really been heavy on the interviews, which I've really enjoyed. But it's nice to kind of delve back into the world, because with the whirlwind, it's weird because with the whirlwind of Star Wars Episode 7 news and rumors, and it is a whirlwind, I kind of got to the point where I almost just disengaged. I'm like, there's too much. After kind of like scraping together every TV spot that the Clone Wars would offer twice a year, the news is kind of different in this world. So here to discuss all the latest happenings in that galaxy far, far away is our third co-host, Mark Herleman.
Hey, everybody. Me and Whistler are ready.
All right. Ready to roll. Looking good on the video, too. So we got a cool video set up that I'm testing out before we do this weekend's video commentary on Revenge of the Sith.
I forget it's there.
Well, and what's interesting, a man who will also be on that Revenge of the Sith commentary this weekend is co-host of Star Wars Beyond the Films right here on the Star Wars Report Network, Mr. Nathan Butler.
Hola.
I like it. Nice, simple. None of that.
For our Spanish listeners out there, it's funny. You said edging close to politics. Wait till you guys hear our coverage of Prelude to Rebellion on Beyond the Films. Oh. It is an allegory for the gay marriage debate, ladies and gentlemen. Just a preview.
They're going there.
I don't know how we wound up there, but we did.
I'll tell you what.
It's Pulp Fiction action.
I don't say this often enough, but I just want to say publicly, I think probably for the second or third time, right here on this show, Star Wars Beyond the Films is by far one of my favorite things that's ever happened to the network, because it's one of the ones I personally love listening to. And it's weird because I'm not the biggest EU fan. So it's like these gold nuggets that are found within episodes of EU where I'm like, I've read that book! Yes! Because when I've actually read
You can sit back and have my fiance's reaction to it, where she sometimes just looks at me and goes, nerd! And I'm like, yes, thank you very much, honey.
I'm always like, uber geek!
Such as us.
But
you could qualify as a nerd. I always say, I'm not smart enough to be a nerd. 100% uber geek, though.
Yes.
Geek, nerd, close enough. It's same thing.
It's semantics at some point. It's but my point being, if you guys are Expanded Universe fans or Clone Wars fans, I've loved the retrospectives you guys did with Clone Wars. Definitely be subscribed to Star Wars Beyond the Films. Before we get into the big news of the day, I'm going to kind of spring this on you guys. I feel compelled to tell a story. So gather around the campfire, children. Old Uncle Riley's going to tell a story.
Speaking of which, Riley actually is an uncle. And
this
has
is true.
Been one since about the age of 5.
Yeah, I'm the youngest of 6, so I was an uncle at a really young age. So I've kind of had that, like something just clicked in me. Is doing like the podcasting and being very long-winded something that's been built in me from a young age because of my unclehood? So I was up it at the Tennessee house, the Blanton home where we formerly resided, that is now, we no longer reside in and is
It is
up
no longer the
sale.
Blanton home, it is the Blanton house for sale.
Yes, it's just a Blanton house for sale. But I was up there last weekend or the weekend before, And it was basically to do the grass, make sure, you know, no pipes had exploded, that sort of thing. I was just up there for the weekend. And I was over at our old home church that we attended up in Tennessee. And, wow, we're covering everything, religion, politics. No, but the point of the story was, and this kind of a peel the curtain back, there's certain being a Christian, as in any community of people, I mean, I think we can even relate to this in the Star Wars community, there are certain stereotypes that you build in. So during a very, very long and heartfelt prayer request and praise session at the beginning of this tradition, there's a young lady, I'll call her Jill, just to insert a name. And Jill said, "My good friend Jane just had her first child, and it went so wonderfully." And then all the older women in the church went, "Aw." And then she said, "Her name is..." And now I have to pause the story. Because two things. One, it was a he, and I just made the mistake of saying her, so I have to correct that right now. Two... On my way up, this house that convenes this church is up on a mountain. It's called Dayton Mountain. It's really more of a ridge. It's not too long. But on my way up, it was pouring rain. And I mean pouring cats and dogs. And as I made my way up, a good friend of mine, Rob, from back in the day when I attended this church, was driving behind me, unbeknownst to me. What I'd forgotten is on my recently purchased first car ever, my 1996 Nissan 200SX, which the quarter million mile car, as I like to call it. I purchased a $2 from Amazon Rebel logo and put it on the back. I like it because it's just a symbol. It's subtle. It's not like Star Wars on the back of my car, or Star Wars number one is the tag. I kind of like I like to show my geekness, but I like to be subtle about it. So it's just like a little small
Riley is a geek chick at heart, really.
Wait, what?
it's chic to be geek.
Could be worse. On mine, on the front of my Kia Rio,
okay.
Because I wanted to get the decals, but you can't get the decals because I'm sure that somebody would screw it up when I'm sitting there at school. Like, "You failed me! You're not going to fail me!" Scratch, 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 right? But no, I've got the license plate on the front. Almost looks like it's supposed to be some Harley Davidson, whatever. It's Vader's face and says Sith Lord by it. And some of the students notice it. Others are like, "What is that? Who's this rebel?" It's like, "Nah, just a nerd. It's okay. We're not going to kill you. Don't kill me."
Yes, exactly. Nice. So, but after this, Rob pointed this out to me having coffee that morning before church started. And he's like, "Dude, saw the love the..." It, like, instead of "Congratulations, you've purchased your first car," it is a step into the larger world of manhood. Actually, you know, pun kind of intended there. A first step into a larger world of owning a vehicle. it was instead, "Nice Rebel logo. I love it." So fast forward to mid prayer request / praise. Lady was saying, "His name is Joseph Jediah blank." At which point, I turned to the side a little bit, cocked the head about halfway, and caught the eye of Rob, who looks over at me, just kind of nods. Like, "Yep, you're thinking exactly the same thing I'm thinking.
Jedi Joseph."
And it was that moment where I realized that Star Wars is like a cultural pig Latin, where there's these times where even outside, like, that's the thing I would normally say happens at a Star Wars celebration. But even within the realm of my own religious institution, there is that brief moment of understanding, of connection, where you're like, there you go. I see what you see. So there you go. That was going to be the cold opening, but Jon Stewart was more funny and also a lot more has a little bit better sense of brevity than I do. So without further introduction, let's jump into the actual news, because after all, we let's do the reporting side of the Star Wars report. Electronic Arts is partnering with Disney and Lucasfilm for the future of Star Wars gaming. And I'm just going to jump straight to the press release, and we're going to discuss it like it was actually significant. All right, today it was announced that Lucasfilm Limited and Disney Interactive are entering into a multi-year, multi-title exclusive licensing agreement with Electronic Arts for the creation of new, high-quality Star Wars games spanning multiple genres for console, PC, mobile, and tablets. By the way, pro tip to the press release composer, writer, person, thing. That's what I like to call a run-on sentence. Lot of commas there, buddy. All right, so the industry leaders and creators for best-in-class blockbuster games, the development and publishing teams at EA will collaborate with the creative teams over at Lucasfilm to provide audiences with all new gaming experiences set in the ever-expanded, expansive Star Wars galaxy, blah, 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 blah. Here's the deal. As part of the agreement, EA studio teams DICE, who are the folks behind the Battlefield series, and Visceral, behind the Dead Space series, are going to join teams with the little-known company BioWare to create these new Star Wars games. I know very little about what that means. So I thought to myself, self, I should get somebody on the show who does, and that would be Nathan Butler, who I have seen many, many, many Facebook posts regarding such games as Battlefield and more specifically Dead Space. So what, as far as for video gamers, Nathan, what does this mean for the future Star Wars games?
Well, could mean quite a bit. First off, it looks as though EA is taking on both aspects of this, publishing the games, which means that they're the ones basically just put them out once they're done. They do all the promotion for them. They do all the advertising budgets and whatnot, and developing the games. And in EA's case, they have a bunch of different development houses, different companies who will focus on creating the actual game itself and then kind of hand it over to Big Papa EA to put out there to the public and whatnot. It's one of these things that's been met with sort of mixed reviews or mixed reactions from the gaming community because there's a lot of things about EA that sometimes rub people the wrong way. It's the monster monolith of the gaming industry at this point as far as publishers go. So, of course, yeah, it's going to have a lot of controversy associated with it. They were recently voted in an online poll, and we know how scientific those are. The worst company in America, I would think that's probably some of those ones that almost destroyed the economy, but that's just me. But they get all kinds of bad press and such to go with that. They're the ones that put out Mass Effect 3 with BioWare and whatnot that got a very bad reception to its ending. So after a bunch of fan complaints, they put out an add-on content ending to sort of change the way it plays out or to add on to the way it plays out.
Which I'm sure went getting, really well.
Yeah, it went. They're getting a lot of flack from microtransactions. There's kind of, when it comes to the money-making model, EA is very much into the money-making model of games and trying to innovate with it in good and bad ways. Things like, okay, you're going to play this game? How would you like to get ahead a little bit? So in Dead Space 3, you can make new weapons out of salvage. Oh, you don't want to spend time getting it in the game, which will take you a little while? Here, pay us a few bucks and here's a bunch of salvage. You can make it kind of for yourself. Or, hey, you've got this game? How's about some add-on content that some people think probably should have been added into the game before we sold it to you in the first place? Sometimes actual add-on levels that make sense. Other times something more in line with what Capcom tends to do, which is, hey, you bought the game. There's actually new characters and new models and stuff like that actually on the disc you bought, but we're not letting you access it unless you pay us 10 bucks, and that'll give you a little download that just unlocks the content on what you already purchased physically. And, of course, there's the whole issue when it comes to these of just sort of milking the iterations of games. EA's got the sports franchise where it's 2010, 2011, 2012, very similar game. If you want to play with the people who's playing most online, you got to buy this new iteration. So they're a pretty profitable company as far as it goes. So it would make sense for them to be able to make quite a bit of profit off the Star Wars games. But all those controversies have sort of caused people to have a little bit of a backlash to it. I'm thinking it's probably actually a good thing in most respects. You've got DICE, which is an EA company.
Yeah, and this is what I more specifically was wondering, because what do the sub-development teams mean, really?
Like, they're the ones who actually create the game itself. So in the case of DICE, for instance, they're the guys behind the Battlefront series. So, or Battlefront, not Battlefront, Battlefield series. Battlefront is Star Wars. The hope is that with a company like that involved, maybe we're going to see a revival of that first assault concept, which was a Star Wars first-person shooter, which is supposed to lead into the possibility of more Battlefront games. They've done a great job with Battlefield, so what's next? That leads to a little bit of issues there because the when you create a video game, you generally aren't making it from scratch. You've got the engine, as it's called, and a lot of different games will use that same engine and then sort of tweak it to create the game itself. That way you're not having to create all the physics for yourself, all the ways the characters interact for yourself, what a certain button does for yourself and all. And they use a thing called the Frostbite engine. And Frostbite 2, which is the current engine, hasn't worked very well on the Wii U. And they've pretty much said Frostbite 3 won't be set up to work at all on the Wii U. So you've got the Nintendo side of gaming that may be cut out of any major new projects coming through DICE, including Star Wars projects. There's a little bit of hesitation on that one. Visceral's the one I'm excited about, because Visceral did Dead Space. Granted, the last two haven't been nearly as good as the first. But Dead Space was an incredibly well-received game, great first-person shooter, and we know that they were working on Star Wars 1313 with LucasArts before everything went pfft. And in theory, this would be a great team to pick up 1313 and run with it, because they already have a lot of experience with these solid third-person shooter-type games. But it's hard to predict what's coming, because you're really dealing with I mean, it's just saying EA is doing it doesn't really mean much of anything. It just means massive company, massive money, massive marketing.
It's sort of and for me, as someone who enjoys video games, but I'm by no means entrenched in the video game community, when I hear EA purchases, well, not purchases, but gains the rights to Star Wars games, I really have no idea what that final product looks like. And I think I get a feeling we're unpacking it here. But when it comes to that negative reputation, the gaming community is specifically known to be really, really, what's the word? Trolly?
Vicious,
kind of vile, and that's
cannibalistic.
That's where they rose and defeat Bank of America, and instead vote EA the worst company.
Right.
And wasn't it Sims 3 or 4? Or SimCity 3 that came out recently that had a lot of controversy about the way that they rolled it out.
Yeah, they've got – there's one of the newer controversies. There's this idea that one of the other ways to make sure that you are making a decent amount of money, and it's something that EA has toyed around with in different forms, is this idea that we don't want to have used games and we don't want to have pirated games. So what do we do to deal with that? One is you just say, okay, anybody who wants to play online has to buy an online pass. So you get one free when you buy the original game, but if you then sell that to, say, GameStop, and somebody buys it used, if they want to play online, they got to pay EA the money again so they can get the online pass. So whatever discount you might have gotten from buying it used might disappear with that. The other way to deal with that is the somewhat more controversial thing that caused a lot of hubbub about the new Xbox, if it actually winds up having this requirement, which it doesn't seem like it probably will. It's just the fear at the moment. Which is the always online requirement. The idea that you would have a game that through its digital rights management, its DRM as it's called, to make sure that you're actually playing a legit copy and you're the first user of that copy, it would constantly need an online connection to check to make sure that that is a valid copy, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of like when you do a new install of Windows on a computer, it has to check and make sure it's a legit Microsoft licensed copy. But it's doing it on that game. And with SimCity, it was an absolute disaster. The way that it wound up playing out, the features that were locked out, if you weren't online, the servers having issues, people having issues connecting in the first place. I mean, it was probably the worst major launch of probably the last 5 years. I mean, it was a mess. Now, some of it's been straightened out at this point, but it raises those concerns again of how are the newest money-making business practices within the gaming industry going to affect the gaming experience? And since EA is so large and has its hand in so many pots, they get a lot of backlash because they're like seen almost as the poster child for those types of things, even though they're not the only ones doing it. But if a small publisher does it, people don't notice as much.
It's not as noticeable.
And we should say probably it's not just that EA is going to have all the license to all Star Wars games. It's all the major ones. When it comes to things like tablet games and the smaller stuff, that's something Disney and Disney Interactive apparently is going to be dealing with. So it's not that EA's got a complete monopoly. It's just over the big stuff, they'll have that that sort of first hand
monopoly. I mean, over the big stuff anyway. But, and see, that's kind of where I found myself, because literally, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was kind of in a state of and this, I think, is going to transition well into kind of our overall thoughts in the direction of the Star Wars franchise now. But if, like, 2 weeks ago, I was very depressed and in ways angry with the way the Star Wars, not the direction that Star Wars was going, but the way Lucasfilm and Disney were choosing to transition towards the new direction. I felt the transition was being very poorly handled, especially when you get things like the Clone Wars only getting this nebulous bonus content, and things like Detours. We've talked about it on the show before, but you name it, Detours.
Amputation, basically.
Yeah, and then the LucasArts news was probably, you know, I guess the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, because it wasn't that. And see, as I tried to communicate this online, a lot of people were interacting on our Facebook and Twitter, misunderstanding me, thinking that I was upset that LucasArts was closing down. And they were saying, well, LucasArts, as you guys pointed out on a Beyond the Films episode, LucasArts is not responsible for most of, at least many of, the best Star Wars games out there. For me, it was more a matter of slashing the current projects, because I was really looking forward to 1313, really looking forward to the potential of First Assault, which is basically Battlefront 3, if we're honest with ourselves. And
right. Now, we should probably clarify the reason why. I mean, you can't say that LucasArts is the one that is most responsible, in case you guys haven't heard the Beyond the Films episode. Sure. LucasArts did a lot of game publishing. That's that differentiation. Publishers put it out. Developers make it. Most of the time, LucasArts was just the one publishing it and licensing it out. They weren't the ones actually making it in-house, except for stuff like The Force Unleashed.
Yeah, I mean, you can't give C.S. Lewis, you can't give HarperCollins the credit for writing the Chronicles of Narnia. You have to give that to C.S. Lewis. And in the same way in the gaming industry. But
I guess that some of my thoughts in this area were, I mean, I was definitely sad about it, and I've been more quiet online recently. But Lucasfilm is really trying, and Disney both are trying to head in a direction that is best for the company and best for the consumer. And I think that means that they're going to look at the big picture more than they will look at the current fans as much. Realize that, oh, well, we're going to sacrifice these things in order to build for a more promising future.
And not just fans that they are ignoring for the time being because they're focusing on other projects. It's money. I mean, there's a lot of money that is sunk into these projects. And so I don't think it's just a matter of them being mean. I mean, Disney and Lucasfilm and LucasArts are,
I would call it more being practical. I don't have to be happy about it, but I can understand
I would say, I would use the term viciously practical, because it's saying, we're not going to transition smoothly. We're not going to wean Star Wars fans off of the way the franchise is currently. It's like, nope, we're done. This is the direction we want to go in. And that kind of did leave me in a state of discontent. And so, you know, two weeks ago or so, I dug out my copy of Battlefront 2 and installed it on my computer. And I dug out my copy of and I dug out the Wii, The Force Unleashed, and I started playing them kind of for nostalgia. I want more Star Wars games, because I got blinded by the fact, to the point where it's very easy, I think, when we approach these sorts of things, to look at the way Disney's heading, and if you don't like one decision, you then start assuming the worst in all decisions. And there's nothing more that frustrates me in the online community, both Star Wars and otherwise, of people who have these broad sweeping generalizations about a company like EA, like saying EA is the worst company in the world, and then voting so on an online poll. Those things bother me, but as has happened many times on this show, I kind of realized I was becoming the pot and kettle, because I really truly believed that was it. No more next generation advanced, you know, quote unquote hardcore Star Wars games during these movies. They would only do maybe movie tie-ins and some casual Angry Birds type stuff. And I let, you know, my disappointment in previous decisions kind of blind the fact that there is way too big of a revenue stream. So at that point. So basically what this decision, this announcement about EA kind of brings to light, is it's forced me to be a little bit more logically optimistic, or, you know, rationally optimistic, so to speak, because I think I have to remind myself that I think the overall direction is still a very, very positive one. So I want to touch base with you, Nathan, because you haven't been on the show to discuss this particular issue. Has your opinions on the direction of the franchise vacillated as much as mine has in the past weeks and months, or have you been pretty positive or negative since the beginning?
I mean, I guess I'm optimistic in the sense that usually when we think it's doom and gloom, it turns out okay. It just means some wrangling in the end. Like, for instance, you know, Clone Wars, when it was first announced, and it's like, hey, look, it's Ahsoka. You didn't know he had a Padawan, and nobody's ever mentioned it before, but yeah, he did. That kind of thing, I mean, that freaked a lot of people out, a lot of controversy about it, and yet turned out okay. Presumably now that it's done, they're going to try to find a way to work everything together, hopefully, or they'll just make it separate continuities, but now that it's done, they can make some decisions about it. So usually when we see these direction changes, there's some freak-out moments, but it turns out fine enough that I'm cautiously optimistic in that sense. But the change of direction for EU fans, I mean, it's been going on for a good year or two, really. I mean, you've got this huge shift with Dark Horse of we're going to shut down all these other series. We're going to launch these things that are meant to be more open to new audiences, casual audiences. Brian Wood's Star Wars series. Del Rey's got the Star Wars, they were calling it the Rebels series, that's coming out, like Razor's Edge, the Leia book and whatnot, where you kind of get this feeling that even before the buyout, there was this sense of Star Wars is shifting directions so that it can bring in new audiences, make it more accessible. And if that means angering, annoying, or putting off older fans, well, the older fans eventually will fade. It's new audiences. It's the new blood that'll keep the franchise going. So from a business decision, it's always kind of seemed practical. But I'm just kind of, I don't know, I'm shaking my head. But I mean, and I was just like you. I was worried about the future of Star Wars games for a while as well. And it wasn't that we were just missing something. They flat out had said, we're going to focus on casual games, et cetera, et cetera. So no wonder we were thinking there wouldn't be any big hardcore Star Wars games coming out, because that's pretty much what they had said. But no, I mean, it's a shift. But I think back to 98, 99, you know, when the prequels were coming, all of a sudden the EU stuff, the marketing, everything starts to switch towards prequel era stuff for a launch, more prequel tie-in stuff in many ways, except New Jedi Order. It's kind of the same thing over again. It's Star Wars switching gears to focus on what's cool, what's hot now. I'm hoping that as we learn more about Episode 7, we'll get a better sense of how this is going to work, how it's going to jive or not with everything else. J.J. Abrams shows a lot of promise. Dave Filoni's showing sketches that look like they might be for an upcoming Star Wars animated series that Filoni and them are working on. There's a lot of talented people there. It's more a question of, is it going to be the bull in the china shop, or is it going to be eased in? And they've certainly taken more of a bull in a china shop feeling to the announcements. I wonder if they're going to do that with the continuity issues and whatnot. Star Wars, the ongoing series, when they said it's not going to be something that is going to require previous continuity and it's for new fans, as if nothing else had ever happened, freaked us all out. And so far, hasn't caused a lot of issues. Had one continuity thing I had emailed Leland Chi about to clarify with an issue in issue number 5 that turned out to be hopefully a non-issue. But the big nuclear strike hasn't happened yet. The yet is still hanging over us, but the more time goes on, the more it seems like things are cooling off. And Star Wars is like North Korea. They threaten, you know, the world looks like it's on the brink of nuclear war for a bit, and it turns out it's just a teenager stretching his legs and getting a little worried about things. Nothing to worry about. He'll go back to, you know, worshiping his daddy and pretending to be a god on Earth at some point. Where were we again? Politics?
Said microwave the takeout, not nuke the Americans!
Exactly. Oops.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm cautiously optimistic, and I think any fan who's been around for long enough is going to be cautiously optimistic. You have to eventually get to the point where you got to, it's that mantra that I've said for years since I kind of got over myself, which was, you know, if it's fandom, but it's giving you more stress and worry than it is giving you enjoyment, you're doing it wrong. Do something else. You know, it shouldn't be. Go on YouTube, do a search for The commencement speech that was eventually turned into a video called This Is Water.
Yes.
I just great saw this. Thing for the idea of just, you know what? We got to change the way we look at things sometime and not see the negative in everything. If it's a change, change can be good. Just wait and see how it turns out before it goes nuts, says the hypocrite who's personally not taken my own advice many, many times.
Hey, I say all the time, life is a hypocrisy, man. We're born to be hypocrites. When you become a parent, it'll become readily apparent to you because you have to be the hypocrite. It's like, don't do what I've been doing my whole life because you are way too young, little one.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the way I don't want to portray myself as too vacillating, but there were those moments where I kind of did get fairly negative. And really the two interviews that I've done over the past 2 weeks have been with, for you guys who are just tuning into this episode and haven't listened to the past two, do so. Listen to episode 87 and 88. I interview Justin Robert Young and Brian Brushwood respectively. And they're two comedy podcaster. Brian's a musician. And as Nathan Butler is holding up, what is that?
I'm sorry, I'm holding up the Insider.
I want that Ewok.
It is the spread of the recent Insider pages 68 and 69, where every toy is pretty much somehow related to Disney. Every stinking one.
I'm going in 6 days. I'm getting that Ewok.
Nice.
We've got Wicket. I got to get that for Jaina, man. That is on my to-get list.
Yeah. Well, right now there's a decent chance, actually, kind of a 50-50. The final plans really need to be made because there's some things in motion. But I'm hoping that Star Wars Report will have a presence at Star Wars Weekends this year.
You guys are killing me. I'm going to need to just make that what our honeymoon turns out to be. It's like, honey, I'm sorry. We need to do some Star Wars Weekends, baby.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what. But the last two episodes, I interviewed Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young, respectively. And they're podcasters who look at the Star Wars universe and community very differently than I do. And there are people who really hate to an almost comedic point the prequels, which is the exact opposite of me. And I've so long tried to extol the virtues and of the prequels and, you know, try to get folks to actually be a little bit more realistic, because people tend to be so irrationally hateful of these films that are just movies. And even if you say you did hate them that much, I don't know why people go to such grand lengths to talk about why they hate them so much. So, and I've talked about that on the show a million times, but it's fascinating to hear, because both of these folks are now extremely optimistic about Star Wars and the direction of the franchise. And it's easy for me to just think to myself, well, that's just because you're cynical adults who, now that the man who you somehow think all the problems with everything in the universe is George Lucas, and now that he's not directly involved, you think everything will be okay. And I think, come on, you know, the first thing you don't like, you'll hate J.J. Abrams just as much as you hated George Lucas, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because it's easy to fall into that, because it's kind of like when the band you like gets discovered, and suddenly all your friends are talking about the band. You're like, man, I was a Star Wars fan before it was cool to be a Star Wars fan, because, you know, I got through and have a proponent of the prequels, which is not something that's easy to do on the internet, let me tell you.
Yeah, they sold out, although that sort of fits this situation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Nathan had mentioned earlier about how, you know, they're always marketing to new fans.
Yeah.
And that is something that back in, you know, StarWars.com's old forum days, you would watch fans drop off, you know, older fans, the Marvel fans would drop out, and then the next group, and then you'd have the Dark Horse Clone Wars fans would drop out when Gendy came along, and then the Gendy fans would drop out when the next one came along. It's interesting to watch how you're coming across a lot of it, because I had ran into that stuff, you know, for myself when the New Jedi Order came, and then that started to lose its luster afterwards. Like, oh man, am I going to enjoy where this is going? And then once it's not being marketed at you, it's like everybody has that epiphany. It's like, oh man, I want my golden day back.
Yeah,
I hate to do it. Can we do an age check real quick? Because there's something that I've noticed recently. I'm 30. My 33, my 34. I'm in my 30s. early 30s. I'm trying not to admit having to be at least a third of a century old. But you guys, 21. Mark, you and I are around the same age, right?
I am 33. I will be turning 34 while at Disneyland.
Nice.
And I'm 21.
And right, I'm 23.
Because my students right now, I teach mostly sophomores, so they're 15, 16 years old, and they'll get the Star Wars reference from time to time, but and even in my AP classes, which are thought of as sort of the more likely to be sort of the ones more tilting towards sci-fi, which I've found year to year is actually seemingly true, I got to tell you, Star Wars is kind of far from their reference point. At this point, not many of them following Clone Wars at all. Very few of them, if they read sci-fi books at all, are reading Star Wars stuff. It is somewhat rare that I run into a student who is even slightly what we would think of as a super fan of Star Wars. And it's, I hate to say it, but in that sense, I think Lucasfilm is kind of, or Disney in this case, is kind of right in the fact that they are losing a current generation. The generation that grew up on, I mean, there's generations of kids growing up on Clone Wars, kids growing up on the prequels, but there are a lot of people out there, especially young people, for whom Star Wars just doesn't connect. And there needs to be something to drag them back into it. Whether we're talking about a big first-person shooter like DICE could put out in the Battlefront vein, as a Star Wars game with massive multiplayer type stuff to get people involved, whether we're talking about a film like J.J. Abrams doing Episode 7 to sort of breathe a potential new life into it in a film franchise, very much like, I mean, I'm one of those who is now back into Trek in the sense that I like the new reboot of it, but I had gotten out of Trek years ago because I'd stopped finding it compelling.
Yeah.
There needs to be something. In that sense, they're right, but as Mark was saying, it's with any change like that, it's almost like a changing of the guard where you have people who, you know, they get to a point where they just say, I'm done. It's changed too much for me. This is not what I – it's the song, right? The Star Wars that I used to know. and I don't know if this is comparable to the prequel shift, but I would probably say that we're in a transition now that's going to be more – it's not divisive is not the word I want to use, but it's going to be probably a bigger shift in fandom than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because this really is not a generational shift, meaning like this little generation of Star Wars to the next iteration of Star Wars. This is a generational shift in terms of who the target audience is, who these fans are going to be, and which ones are going to be the ones probably carrying the torch of this generation of films. I don't see a lot of people out there who are building their fandom and getting super hyped for the EU based on prequels and Clone Wars. But it might happen with this and all the tie-in materials for Episode 7 and onward. We may be the ones left behind in a sense where we either have to adapt or, from a fandom perspective, perish. But, you know, we should be able to do that by now if we're adults.
I think that's a fascinating way to approach it because when you talk about the Clone Wars and really the state of Star Wars before the Disney purchase, it's very common mantra. When you say mantra, it sounds more sophisticated.
Mando.
It was the mantra of Star Wars fans to say, look at the Clone Wars. So many kids are watching the Clone Wars. So many parents are introducing their kids to this galaxy. And look at how the Clone Wars is really introducing a whole new generation of kids to Star Wars. Those are true in and of itself, but I think it can kind of be intellectually dishonest to yourself because Clone Wars does not have the reach that Star Wars films on the big screen have. And in this day and age, I think there are certain types of video games, like you mentioned, Nathan. I think that's a whole other discussion in and of itself that could have the cultural permeation with the Star Wars brand that a film, big screen film would. But at this time, the Clone Wars is just a smaller audience. It's a drop in the bucket, so to speak, because since there are more films have come out, it's in the same way. Honestly, the Clone Wars is very comparable to the Star Wars expanded universe in terms of the way the books and novels and comics. It's a subset of the fan community, which is very vibrant and has remained always so. But you speak of the mainstream, Nathan, and I think that Disney and as these words come out of my mouth, it's kind of weird. But Disney realized something that Star Wars fans haven't realized, and that we don't have to set, in their term, it's probably financially motivated, but we don't have to, as Star Wars fans, as fans of this galaxy, we don't have to settle for sub-tier, not subpar, but sub-tier content that's highly specifically targeted to a small subset. Because Star Wars is meant to appeal to millions of people that in this grand event go see this one film. And I think that's the sense that when Disney bought it, that change in the air that you feel is this kind of rising tide of, I think, all of these students in your class 2 years from now. Yeah. Nathan, I'm pretty sure I know where they will be in May 2015.
And I'll say, just kind of on top of that, one thing that if there's one thing the Clone Wars helped to prove when it comes to the way that fans enter into the saga these days, it was to prove what we had sort of seen as a strength and yet the most glaring weakness in Star Wars for the last decade or so, which has been the fact that the Star Wars expanded universe, the comics, the games, everything except the Clone Wars, got to a point where it is so dense, it is virtually impossible for a new fan to come in and truly catch up anymore, to truly be fully immersed in it, because they haven't grown with all these books. I mean, I'm doing that From the Star Wars Library video series on YouTube. I'm almost at episode 140, and I'm still in the 80s. In covering materials. I mean, who knows how long it's going to take to go through the 90s, the 2000s, and so on. There's so much out there that they have a point when they say that Star Wars is difficult when it comes to accessibility once you get beyond the movies at this point. Though, I think another an issue of why people are kind of having a backlash to this. So think about it this way. Star Wars has almost been on a decline from a cultural standpoint, in the sense that we had the original films, the special editions, the prequels. Now Lucas is done, because he always meant to make 6, folks, really, truly. It was never 12 or 9 or anything like that.
Minus the drafts that he submitted to Disney.
Yeah, and then he adds in Clone Wars, and we're like, oh, that's kind of weird, kind of a last hurrah, we guess. But it was this idea that Star Wars, from the standpoint of the big Lucas-driven stuff, or the big G-canon, whatever you want to call it, stuff, is kind of done, and it would be the EU that would carry it onward. And then comes Disney, and all of a sudden it's back in theaters, new animated series, and all this type of stuff. And we had gotten to a point after about 30 years where I think Star Wars fans have fallen into what happens with a lot of cultural icons, where there's this phenomenon where you start out and it's sort of the cultural mythology that you get into it. It is the franchise that you follow, and you embrace it so much, and the community embraces it and interacts with it so much, you start to think of yourselves as you're the custodians of this saga. It's not Lucas. It's not Lucasfilm. The fans are the custodians. But if you let yourself get into that mindset, kind of ignoring the intellectual reality of the fact that they're the copyright holders, they decide, then when they make a change like this, you're going to feel as though you've almost been betrayed, that something's been ripped from your hands that was really never yours to begin with. And a lot of fans, I think the backlash to that, to the prequels, to the Clone Wars, has been about this sense of feeling as though we should have more control than we really do, and realistically, we really should. Because we have grown so tight with this for decades that you get to the point where you think of it as wrongly yours.
I couldn't say it better myself. In fact,
you know, I wanted to touch real quick on what Nathan was talking about the teenagers in this class. You know, I was a Star Wars fan before I was a teenager, but hormones drove me to hide that. You know, I mean, I was a closet Star Wars fan. It wasn't until after high school I had a decent girlfriend that was like, hey, I'll buy you a book. Not only that, for my birthday, she got me the first Star Wars book signed by Timothy Zahn. I was like, yeah. And then after that, you know, in fact, it was my mom that got me the first book. So it was the women in my life are what unleashed the closet Star Wars fanatic in me. And once I got out of high school and I didn't care anymore about what was socially acceptable and what was social suicide, I was like, ah, forget it. I don't care. I'm going to embrace my inner geek.
Well said. I mean, between what Mark and then Nathan, I think that's exactly the way I've kind of come to this conclusion, because I think the less that we take ownership of and the more we focus on enjoying, it's a very simple principle, I think the more we'll get out of this franchise moving forward. I think that could be like the one lesson that we do take away.
This is water.
This is water.
This is water.
This is water. I just saw that video.
Well, basically, Star Wars is a lot like the story of Anakin Skywalker. It rises, falls, it redeems itself.
Occasionally burns in lava.
Shows up an earlier version of itself in ghost form somehow. No.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely there's definitely a cycle to the Star Wars phenomena. It's not dead yet.
Certainly. Yeah. And I think
this too shall pass and it will be okay in the end.
Yes.
Life is circles, fandom, climb on the ride.
Although I do think the best thing is Star Wars is North Korea, which by the way is the show title, Nathan.
There so you go. All right,
that wraps this episode of the Star Wars Report. It wraps it right up. That's it, folks. I want to tell you guys about a few things before you turn off your smartphones or iPods.
I'm going to have to ditch out real quick.
Okay. I'm insulted deeply and personally. No, I'll talk to you soon, Bethany.
Jeez.
Okay.
She doesn't want to hear your last comment.
I don't.
No. Is this like a 12-page script he's got?
Exactly.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I enjoyed talking with
good times,
you, Mark, again, and you, Nathan, as well.
Yeah.
Take care, B.
What I'll be doing is stick around right after the credits, and I'll read a piece of feedback that we got from one of the last interviews as well. So that'll be kind of a little bonus after the credits. But as far as the stuff you guys need to know now, I'm still doing some blogging, more awesome blogging going on at StarWarsReport.com. You guys should definitely be subscribed to the RSS feed there. And more importantly than ever, always sign up for our mailing list, StarWarsReport.com/mailing list, where nearly every week I'm releasing some kind of super cool bonus content. And basically what I do is I link to those guys on the mailing list. When I send out something new, I send out a downloadable link to that bonus content that only the guys on the mailing list get. And then also a link back to the super secret page that has a database of all the other bonus content we've had. And we have stuff like bonus panels from Dragon Con and an interview with Ashley Eckstein that was from Star Wars Reach Tape. That was all exclusive and bonus. And then, of course, like a 40-minute... mostly non-Star Wars interview with Brian Brushwood that we did last week. Amazing stuff. So sign up for our mailing list, StarWarsReport.com/mailing list. Of course, Facebook and Twitter, as always, Star Wars Report's what you want to look for. You can support us at the website. Click on the Amazon banner. You can click on the Audible link. All that's there on StarWarsReport.com. And I want to make sure I'm not forgetting anything. Oh, our voicemail line, of course. You can give us a call with our telephone number, 858-859-0SWR. Super easy to remember. And email us, starwarsreport@gmail.com. And if you feel like being a good contributing member of Star Wars Society, you can leave us a review on iTunes. So we really do appreciate that, and that helps us get up in the rankings there in the old iTunes podcast store. That puts a wrap on this episode of the Star Wars Report. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next time, for Mark, for Nathan, this is Riley Blanton saying, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. This is a comment from Alamon Henry. I hope I got that correct. Thanks for the insightful interview. Mr. Brushwood was a great guest. I think my biggest takeaway from listening to this is that regardless of your level of fandom in the Star Wars universe, we are all now collectively emerging from the deep black sea of hate and cynicism that engulfed us after the disappointment of the prequels, and once again are feeling the warmth of the sun of optimism and excitement that is the Disney deal. I love loving things. And I'm glad that it's okay to be unironically psyched for new Star Wars films again. Thank you so much, Alamo Henry, and thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Star Wars Report. Catch you later.